The Egyptian stock market could reopen this weekend.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Happy Friday. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. Celebrations are going on in Cairo today, marking a week since the president there stepped down. And the economy is slowly getting back to normal. Thousands are on the streets with businesses hoping they'll buy some stuff, and the stock market hoping traders will buy some shares. The BBC's Rob Young is with us from central Cairo. Hi, Rob. From the relatively small Cairo Stock Exchange to what could be the world's biggest, now the New York Stock Exchange merged with the German benchmark has a problem. What the two are going to be called. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports they're taking suggestions on a new name.
The name must avoid ruffling any nationalistic feathers. This is, after all, a German takeover of an American institution. The Germans are in the driver's seat, so it should be a German name, but perhaps one that's unthreatening and doesn't grate on the American ear. In the interests of transatlantic harmony, economist Andrew Hilton has a suggestion.
I would suggest that you simply choose as the holding company name the name of a good German. Bach, Beethoven, Mozart.
That may not play too well on Wall Street, however. Senator Charles Schumer, who's politically close to the street, says the issue of the name could be a deal-breaker. He says he doesn't mind what the merged exchange is called, as long as the first two words of the new name are New and York. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's check in with the BBC's Rob Young in central Cairo, talking about the stock exchange there. Hi, Rob.
Hi, hello.
So when the market does indeed open, what's likely to happen? Are we talking a big buying spree or a sell-off?
Well, many analysts think that the market will continue its slide because there are still so many unanswered questions about the way Egypt will be run in the future. However, there is a Facebook campaign to try and persuade Egyptians to spend as much money as they can buying shares. More than 16,000 people have already agreed to sign up on Facebook and buy shares. Well, in the centre of busy Cairo, I spoke to the woman behind the Facebook campaign, Sarah Hashlameh, and she told me why this campaign is so important.
When people see that we as Egyptians, we have faith in our stock market, we have faith in our economy, this will definitely reflect and have its implications on the whole world.
But they may well be no match for international investors who, say some analysts, will continue to pull their cash out of Cairo.
Hey, Rob, how are businesses coping there?
Well, if you ignore the tanks, there is a sense of normality here in Cairo. The shops are open and the street sellers are back in business. But the banks, they've been told to stay shut. It's estimated that weeks of protests have cost this country's tourism, construction and manufacturing industries more than $1.5 billion.
The BBC's Rob Young in Cairo. Rob, thanks.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Well, markets in Europe are mostly lower right now. Food maker Smucker's reported a profit in its last quarter, slightly lower than last year. Fellow food maker Campbell's Soup reports later today. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow was up 0.25%, about 30 points, to close at 12,318.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. And by reputation.com, protecting and improving your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. Reputation Defender is now reputation.com.
President Obama's federal budget proposal doesn't include cuts to Social Security, despite his own bipartisan commission recommendation. Well, a lot of folks in Washington say real budget solutions have to start with shoring up Social Security, something Republicans and Democrats came together for in 1983. That's when President Ronald Reagan and House Speaker Tip O'Neill helped save the program from going broke. Julian Zelizer is a presidential historian at Princeton University. He's with us now to talk about that moment in history. Good morning.
Good morning.
Talk about what happened in that Social Security deal from the early 1980s between President Reagan and Speaker Tip O'Neill.
The 1983 reforms were very important and very dramatic. Congress made the decision to solve a short-term imbalance in the program where we didn't have enough money coming in compared to what we were spending. Benefits were cut, taxes were raised, and Republicans and Democrats entered into a bipartisan agreement that fixed the program and got it on sound footing.
Well, it didn't quite fix it, because here we are nearly 30 years later, and we're talking about many of the same things that we were talking about then, right?
That's absolutely true. The 1983 reform was about a short-term problem. Literally, the program was about to run out of money. And that crisis, which was more immediate still than the one we face today, placed a lot of pressure, not just on Democrats and Republicans, but moderates in both parties, to come out and take rather courageous stands at the time to find a solution.
What can we learn from that today, then?
Well, I think the first is that reform is possible. The fact is, Social Security was reformed in 1983. It was reformed in 1977. And it was also reformed many times before that, since its creation in 1935. It's very important that there's going to be leaders, meaning members of Congress and the White House, who are willing to do what their party doesn't want them to do.
And could something like that happen today? I mean, you say it takes leadership and courage. Do you see leaders and courageous people out there?
Sometimes, you know, history takes you by surprise. You don't see the leaders today. You don't see the bipartisanship. But this program is enormously popular. And one thing that Republicans and Democrats understand is that there will be payback for both parties if the system breaks. And so I think that pressure can counteract the polarization we see in Washington.
Presidential historian Julian Zelizer from Princeton University. Julian, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, from the Marketplace Spoiled Food Desk, the Guinness Book of World Records has identified the world's oldest wedding cake. It's 113 years old, baked way back in 1898. The Willis Museum in England has the cake on display. A sampling of the fruitcake inside shows the dessert is still moist, but the outer shell isn't doing so well. The frosting is cracked. From the Blitzkrieg of World War II, I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
We're all living such increasingly digital lives. What do you suppose happens when we just pull the plug?
I have not been using the internet for email, for Facebook, for sharing photos.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, getting by getting offline. Next time on Marketplace, the rest of the day's business news as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.